Kubernetes. You've heard the term. You might loosely know what it means, or perhaps you've caught wind of some dev using it in your organization. There's a lot of hype over this project that is only 5 years old. Despite all the noise and clatter, the actual adoption of Kubernetes remains relatively low. Not everyone is a Netflix or an Uber or a Google. We're not all trying to solve planet-scale distributed computing platform problems. We just want to make sure our website doesn't go down and that finance can process payroll because, you know, getting paid is good. As an IT practitioner and curious person, do you actually need to know more about Kubernetes? Does Kubernetes and its ecosystem materially matter to your organization? Is Kates just a stepping stone to more advanced technologies becoming the laserdisc of media formats? Those are the questions we're going to try to answer on this episode of Day 2 Cloud. Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, part of the Packet Pushers family of podcasts. On Day 2 Cloud, we have a frank discussion of what happens when cloud stops being polite and starts getting real. I'm your co-host, Ned Bellavance, Ned1313 on Twitter. Also joining me is the always ephemeral Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter.
What does it mean I'm ephemeral? Am I constantly changing? Is that what you're trying to say about
you're
me?
You're a chimera.
I'm here and then I'm gone again. I'm short TTL. I don't know.
All of those things. And that's why we need Kubernetes to keep you scheduled on the appropriate node.
I see what you did there.
You might be part of a daemon set. I don't know. It's a strange world we live in. Our guests today are two gentlemen you may already be familiar with. Justin Warren is a frequent guest on theCUBE and Tech Field Day events. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for being here. And the CTO advisor himself, also a frequent guest on theCUBE and Tech Field Day events, Mr. Keith Townsend.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome that you're both here and taking some time out of your very busy schedule at KubeCon to talk to us, so I appreciate that. We are here at KubeCon 2019, surrounded by 12,000 of our closest friends.
Which, Ned, I want to point out, I was listening to an older Kubernetes podcast where they were talking about KubeCon, I believe 2018, where it was only 7,000 people, if I remember right. So if I got that right, in a year, it's grown from 7,000 attendees to 12,000.
It might have grown slightly. So I didn't really look at the numbers from last year, and in my mind, I was like, oh yeah, this would be a fun conference. It would be like 3,000 people. You know, it'll be a small kind of affair. And then I saw the 12,000, I was like, oh, okay, so this is not going to be the close family thing that I thought it was going to be, which, I mean, even at 3,000 people.
This year is nuts. It is so busy. It is amazing.
You can see how the conference organizers are literally figuring out how to deal with this volume of people because they haven't had to do that before.
Well, and it's not just the volume of people, but money has hit the show. 200 sponsors.
Holy cow. Yeah. So many sponsors. There's an overflow hall for all the sponsors.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like Kubernetes might actually be a thing. Maybe more than just a flash in the pan. So I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts on where Kubernetes is in the hype cycle. Justin, what do you think?
It's pretty hypey. There's a lot of interest in the idea of Kubernetes, and there are certainly some organizations who are using it, but not, as you said in the introduction, there's not actually that many who are running actual workloads in production. So we had a press conference kind of thing yesterday where they had a panel of customers who are using it, and a lot of people asked a whole bunch of questions about, you know, Kubernetes and why, what's it like to change your organization to use it and everything else. I put up my hand and asked an impertinent question of, so how many workloads are you actually running in production as a rough percentage of the total amount?
Sure.
And only one of them wanted to answer, and it was less than 10%.
Less than 10% of their total workloads.
Yep.
Interesting.
Mm.
So the stuff that's probably actually making them money, not running on Kubernetes.
A lot of it probably isn't yet, but I think the key here is to understand that this is a leading indicator. That's what I'm treating this show as. Mm-hmm. I've been coming to them for 4 years. I was at the first one in Seattle when it was about 500 people, and it was tiny, and it felt like a V-mug. it was very cool. There's lots of people with purple hair and hoodies, and you know, no one wearing a suit jacket, I think, other than me. And I ditched mine on day two. Yeah, this is a leading indicator of just how much it's growing. So, yeah, there might only be 10% of workloads are running on it today, but you got to start somewhere. And this feels a lot like, even say, the early days of VMware, where it was, we're just going to use it to do some consolidation of workloads and try to get the efficiency of your use of hardware up. And then later on, we run everything in VMs.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's early days, sure, but I can see it growing much, much bigger than this.
Right. And Keith, I know this is your first KubeCon, correct?
This is my first KubeCon.
And you've had an interesting relationship with Kubernetes thus far, or opinions, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. I've been pretty frank in saying that I hate Kubernetes.
Okay. Yeah. So since you're at the conference and you've been observing things and people, has your opinion changed at all? Where do you think things are in the hype cycle?
You know, it was after being called a second grader yesterday at the keynote. The infamous metaphor of being called a second grader and, you know, been insulted and saying kind of, you know, we old enterprise folky don't know what we're doing, you know. We got to a point where I had some really constructive conversations with some of the leaders of the community. Co-chair of the event is Brian Lau, the senior staff engineer at VMware. And I think he probably painted the best picture of what Kubernetes could be for me.
Okay.
And walked me through where he thought the maturity is at and where it can be for enterprises. And walking away from that, I'm like, you know what? That was very reasonable. And
well, how did he pitch it to you?
He didn't call you like a 7-year-old?
He did not call me a 7-year-old.
Well, that's a good start.
He gave me a full cup of water without a sippy cup.
Without a lid.
Without a lid. I felt
all grown up.
Yeah, I felt all grown up. But you know what? We get wrapped up. We're technologists, and I think one of the challenges at a show like this, the small components of what make up Kubernetes and the ecosystem and CNCF, people, the maintainers of these projects are very proud of their projects. Mm-hmm. They're very proud of the things that they've made. However, when you're talking to my audience, they want to know, well, ultimately, what's the business value of the thing that you made? Mm-hmm. Day one of the keynote was, oh, let's update you on these 7 projects that we'll do something, maybe, and
yes.
In the same session that Justin was in, they challenged us to say that enterprises have to get away from depending on a product being around for more than a couple of years. And I have businesses that make their money off of HPUX, their systems that make their money
sure.
run on HPUX, and that's a scary concept.
Mm-hmm.
So what Brian laid out to me was like, you know what, forget about the details of the technology, YAML files, multiple data sets, canary deployments. Think through ultimately what we want to do in technology, which is to create software that solves business problems. Kubernetes should be that enabling layer that allows you to do that anywhere.
Right.
That's the vision. Where it's at now, is why I hate it. But at the same time, I've sponsored projects like OpenFast, which is built on Kubernetes.
Right.
So I love the statement of where they would like it to go. It's just coming to an event like KubeCon, which they're talking mainly speeds and fees, which is some of our other enterprise conferences are getting away from.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of stuck in the past, in a sense, in this conference of talking speeds and fees.
That can be an indicator of an immature marketplace that needs to focus on those speeds and feeds as opposed to some of the higher level constructs, because those are still a legitimate concern. Can this thing perform?
Okay, let me play the role of the average enterprise customer for a minute here. I'm mm-hmm. sitting listening to the keynotes. The opening keynote was an update on Kubernetes and all of the related projects that can plug in and help you with certain other things, storage and security and so on. As I'm listening to them describe a lot of these things, I'm going, I don't know why I need this. I don't know why this is better for me necessarily than what I already have. Do I have to add this to my public cloud layer? What if I'm not that big into containers and most of my workloads are stateful and, you know, don't really change that much? Do I need any of this? You know, why is all of this hype actually applicable to me? You know, so if I put myself in that role, I think I'm asking those questions, and I don't have a clear answer for the majority of businesses that are out there, I don't think.
Well, it's not for you. I would put it to you. So here's a different analogy. Imagine that you parachuted yourself into a doctor's convention or dentist or something, and they're all talking about the latest advances in teeth hygiene. So as a person who has teeth and visits a dentist, do you care about any of that?
Mm-mm.
No, you don't, because you have other people. You go to a dentist and their job is to understand all of this detailed technology and what it does and how it solves problems. You turn up and say, I have a sore tooth and I want you to fix it for me. So in this terrible analogy, the IT industry, we're the dentists, we're the doctors, we're supposed to be the trusted advisors who know how all of this stuff works so that you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Well, so even pivot my, you know, my analogy then of the role I'm playing to be an IT architect. And I'm going, I've been living with VMware clusters and for a long time, and that does a lot of what I need. I've got some stuff up in public cloud, and you know, why do I need Kubernetes and all these other projects?
Sure. That the comparison that I've been hearing over and over, and Justin, you made it too, it's like, well, Kubernetes is here where VMware was, say, 15 years ago.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's always an apt comparison, because in some ways the analogy makes sense, but I think in some ways the analogy also falls down.
Well, so I'm playing devil's advocate here, Ned, too, because I think, you know, for me, the answer that I've come back to about why I need this is, if I look at this as early days, as really kind of complex software with this huge ecosystem of people that are solving various problems with it, and it's a rapidly iterating orchestration platform that is Kubernetes, what does it ultimately do for me? And it allows me as a business to keep my application up and running in a hands-off way, you know, mm-hmm. in theory, when I've done it, and then develop that application quickly. That's something that every business can identify with, even though as we look at it now, it's like, oh man, this is like a cubist painting I'm supposed to be making some kind of sense out of. I don't know what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, I'm curious, what components of the analogy do you think do make sense with VMware, and Do you see where some of the gaps might be?
This is the VMware analogy, not my terrible dentist analogy.
I mean, we could go either way. There are gaps in teeth, so I guess it works.
Maybe. Yeah, interesting. Look, there's a lot of parallels because it's essentially enabling infrastructure. So Kubernetes is an infrastructure layer that you build on top of. So that a platform is something you build on top of.
Right.
So Kubernetes is a platform in a similar way that VMware is a platform. It also has an ecosystem. That's changing a little bit these days, the way VMware works, but I remember from 5-10 years ago, one of the best things about VMworld, the conference run by VMware, was that it was an ecosystem conference, mm-hmm. because we lost all of the independent conferences like Interop and Comdex and that sort of stuff. So we didn't have somewhere where the entire industry could come and meet on kind of neutral ground. That's what I see happening here with KubeCon and Cloud Native Con, and that is the whole point of having it be an open source foundations and a neutral meeting ground where a whole bunch of vendors can come and meet and say, this is how we are going to build things on top of this infrastructure, and we are all going to make money by providing value on top of what is basically just a commodity service.
Sure.
And going back to your question about what should the enterprise architect do when they look at the excitement of Kubernetes, I think you should ultimately come to KubeCon, and I'm going to keep calling it KubeCon because it's Kubernetes, so KubeCon.
Sure.
They should come to KubeCon for the same reasons that they would go to VMworld, which is, this is where everyone's at. Like, maybe 20% of the audience that I've seen is audience that I've seen at other IT conferences, specifically VMworld.
The argument to that would be reInvent. That's where everybody's at.
I think everyone is at reInvent, but reInvent is not neutral ground.
Right.
So from the sense that, you know, a lot of the things we loved about VMworld while EMC owned VMware at the time, you still could come in and have great conversations with NetApp, et cetera, mm-hmm. even Microsoft. That has changed a little bit with Dell Technologies owning VMware. And AWS, there is no other cloud than AWS when you're at reInvent. So, you know, I can talk about other projects. I can talk about OpenFaZ. I can talk about Knative, which is actually not even a CNCF project.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that here. But outside of that, you know, how do you start your Kubernetes journey? You should start it with what sounds like a basic question. The Kubernetes solves the problem that you're having. Huh. Who would thought that you should implement a technology that solves a problem that you're having? What we're not accustomed to in IT is that usually, you know, a vendor like VMware would come and give us vSphere that does all these wonderful things, and then we run into a situation where we need a new feature, and lo and behold, it's in vSphere. we might have been paying for it all this time and not known it. Kubernetes is not that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand specifically when we're going on a Kubernetes journey, we're deploying Kubernetes because we want to have containers spread across a large geographic area so that we're reducing latency to end users and we can spin up applications at will, et cetera, et cetera. We're taking advantage of things that are natively done in Kubernetes that we can't do in vSphere, we can't do with Microsoft solutions or public cloud, et cetera.
Yeah, it's a common layer so that you can do multi-cloud. You can mm-hmm. run it the same. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're running an application one day in Google and tomorrow you put it in Azure and then the day after that you put it on site. It means that you can write your application in the one way. And wherever you deploy it, if you deploy it onto Kubernetes, it feels the same. That's the whole point of certified Kubernetes.
Right. I think one of the biggest differences between VMware and Kubernetes is an open source project that no one sells just Kubernetes. You have to build something on top of it to make a sale, whether it's services and support, some third-party tool, whatever it is. Whereas VMware sold vSphere as a product. Yes, you could get the free hypervisor, but if you wanted anything that actually did something, you probably needed vSphere. So they actually had a sellable product, and it was not developed open source. It was all developed in their own proprietary code. The other big comparison that I hear between Kubernetes and another project is OpenStack.
Oh,
and it's always done as
always
done as a cautionary tale, like, oh, is Kubernetes going to be the next OpenStack? So, Keith, you might have some feelings about that.
You know, don't say that out in the open. You will get, you know, it's a very safe conference, but you'll get some very mean stares.
Some glares.
Some very long glares.
Particularly from the OpenStack people.
Well, it's ironic.
Not bitter.
Mirantis bought Docker, so there you go. But
we'll put a pin on that.
Yeah, we'll put a pin on that. I think the comparison is the difference, the similarity in cultures. This is very much we've never done anything in enterprise, and the way that enterprise does enterprise IT is bad. You enterprise folks don't know what you're doing. You need to change your delivery and operation style to one that's more flexible and the ability to survive failed projects, et cetera, et cetera. OpenStack very much had that culture mm-hmm. that we're not going to change. We're not going to become like AWS because we're different than AWS. The enterprise should come to us versus us coming to the enterprise. Kubernetes is very much that culture. It is, you know what? The project might not be here a year and a half from now. Okay, so what? Put on your big boy pants and move to a new project once this project fails. We're not going to change the way we build software to suit the enterprise. I think that, for me, is the direct comparison. It's not the same level of abstraction, not the same level of services. It is the same culture.
Enterprises, to a certain degree, and one of the things that I will just say bothered me about the first keynote and some of the other people have been giving presentations is the assumption that enterprises are incompetent.
Yes.
Which is harsh because enterprises are there to make money. And if your solution doesn't help them make more money, they don't want it.
Oh, But it's really cool.
But you can be like, you're incompetent. But what you're really saying is you're not interested in my project because it doesn't actually help you solve a problem. So, I get that. They're both bitter on both sides. But
the thing that people need to realize is that these organizations are full of humans. And that's the problem. You know, I'm on record. Humans ruining everything since forever. And the approach that OpenStack didn't really kind of take the full AWS approach. They were trying to do what they thought was the right way of doing things, which it turned out that that's not actually what customers wanted to buy. Mm. So that's often not a great way to actually run any kind of project or business. The big difference I see with Kubernetes is that they have learned a lot of the lessons from OpenStack. I've spoken to them a few times over the years about, we're deliberately not doing things in this way because of where that took us when we were doing it as part of OpenStack. But the one thing that they don't want to compromise on regarding enterprises is that when you're trying to build software today, in a cloud native way. So we like cloud. Like AWS is a huge company because a lot of people decided that actually this way of renting resources temporarily to try stuff, if it stops working or you decide you don't want to do it anymore, you just turn it off. You right. don't have to go and decommission 700 racks full of servers. It's much more efficient. It's much quicker to try things and find out if they work or not. That way of working is what Kubernetes is about. And enterprises are trying to become more cloud-like in the way that they develop software. And people have decided that when we write software today, this is how we're going to approach it. Software that was written 30 years ago was written in a different way. A whole bunch of stuff was different then. We didn't have ubiquitous computing in those days. Networks were kind of slow. We had mainframes and VT220 terminals. That's just called progress. So, of course, things are going to change. Mm-hmm. What I think they meant with the keynote was that, look, we're not going to change the way Kubernetes does things in order to go back to the way software was written 40 years ago.
Sure.
Because times have changed. And you also need to change things. Now, enterprises change slowly, and there's a bunch of reasons for why that is. One of the advantages of Kubernetes is it allows you to change things more rapidly, and that's a goal that a lot of organizations actually want. Getting there involves changing the humans, though, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, I think it's less about incompetence and more about the significant shift that's underway, because it changes everything. It changes your development process for applications, how you test and deliver those applications, how you roll out changes into the production environment. Then if you've, let's say you've done this, we keep talking about cloud native, you know, let's say you've done a cloud native deployment with containers and microservices, and you've got now a very complex mesh of networks, interactions that are happening between all microservices. How do you troubleshoot that? You know, the old way, we knew how to troubleshoot that. I'd get on the load balancer and fire up TCP dump and watch both sides of the proxy and figure it out what was going on. We had ways, we had methods, we had agents, we had, you know, all these things that could gather information for us in a predictable way. And as long as we knew the app flow, it was all good. We have the same problem now. It's just been made much more complex because of how this kind of a world, the cloud native world, deploys applications. So again, it's not about incompetence as much as how you do this and the way you have to think. I keep finding myself challenged over and over again as I listen to what the different projects do, what Kubernetes does and how it operates under the hood, and how cloud native constructs interact with all of that. And I have to get over what I think I know about hypervisors and vSphere and virtual machines and all of that kind of, it's almost like I got to throw it all away. There's roots of it that are still true, but then rethink all of it and then look at how I would fix the problems I used to have as an operator now in this modern world and go, okay, there's a lot to get your head around. There's new tools to understand and a lot of back-end infrastructure to comprehend so that you can be effective in this environment, whether you're a developer, a business-level person trying to get an app out the door, or an operator infrastructure expert. It's been, honestly, a little intimidating, but also encouraging because the more conversations I've had with different companies and read more and more about the different projects, it's like, okay, I used to do X, now I would do Y, or I would do Y and probably Z to accomplish the same goal I used to accomplish. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a lot of work. It is, again, I use the word intimidating, and that's a little bit of how I feel right now, to start trying to get deeper and deeper into this way of thinking and deploying apps.
So let me add to your intimidation.
Oh boy.
I think you just threatened Ethan.
Yeah. Let me give you an offer you can't refuse.
This is gonna be good.
Yeah. So I'll change the name of the technology. Let's say that I'm currently running a large vSphere environment for a pharmaceutical company. I've validated my applications from Oracle, running my ERP platform like SAP. It cost me, from a testing perspective, not at a functional application testing perspective, $10 million to replatform that application to something other than vSphere. So let's say I want to go to Kubernetes. So before I've spent a dime on the technology transformation, I've had to spend $10 million on audit and process validation to say that this platform can now accept, be ran on a new platform, Kubernetes. Now, hopefully I'm engineering this in the way that the abstractions, and I can validate the Kubernetes layer and any abstraction underneath Kubernetes I can change out so that I'm not spending another $10 million when the project fails. But I have to change all the machinery behind that validation process. I have to change all the machinery around operations, etc. And it's on a fast-moving project. If I'm an executive and I looked at containers 3 years ago versus containers today, and you want me to make a $10 million bet today, changing my operations and betting on a technology that I don't know if it'll be around in 2 years, let alone 3 to 5 to whatever, by the time I make the conversion, Kubernetes might have disappeared. So I'm hearing, and as I'm advising, my new advice coming out to customers and clients today is understand the problem you're solving. And the problem you solve, I think Justin has hit on this several times, is a people problem versus a technology problem. You need to get your people in a position where, from not just IT, but all the surrounding supporting orgs can adopt this type of change that quick.
I feel like we got to address this elephant you just put in the room. It wasn't in the room until you said it. You know, you're adding to my intimidation.
Hello, Mr. Pink. Elephant?
will Kubernetes be around in the next 2 years, 5 years, whatever? I think the industry has converged around this as the orchestration platform of choice so that there's no question remaining that it's the winner. Docker Swarm is done. I forget who the other contenders even were at this point because Kubernetes is it. So as an orchestration platform, and I use this show as evidence of that, not just attendee growth, but also the ecosystem around it, the 200-odd vendors you mentioned and sponsors, Ned, that are here that have made products that interact directly with Kubernetes. And it's not like that all happened over the last year. People have been talking about their Kubernetes plugins, interactions. We work with, you know, in the networking space, CNI, you know, we can offer you something there, et cetera. There's been a groundswell of code that has been written, startup companies that have come to market, you know, out of that launch phase, and now they're ready to go and happy to take your money. They've all bet big. The industry has bet big on Kubernetes. So my opinion, I don't think we've got to worry about that. I think Kubernetes is here to stay. There's some question about, will we care, you know, if Kubernetes is the engine under the hood of the car? Are we just going to be driving the car? Are we going to care how the pistons go? You know, that's maybe a question. But I think Kubernetes as a technology is there.
So I think that becomes the question. What am I validating? What am I building my architecture on top of? Am I building my architecture upon the abstraction of APIs? And these APIs just happen to be the APIs that Kubernetes use so that I can – you know, Kubernetes today, Meso tomorrow, or if I go one layer below as I'm troubleshooting, I'm using Jaeger today and some other project tomorrow to do my debugging and troubleshooting. I'm dependent on an API layer. And I think that the challenge is that the industry isn't even close to defining what that is, especially for the enterprise.
I'll agree with you there. You know, in that there's, Ned, actually, I think you and I were talking about this over lunch. There's an immaturity that I got a sense of at this show,
right?
Where there's so much going on, and there's so many people going in so many different directions, and so many different problems to be solved, and markets that are trying to be addressed. That you know, immaturity, Justin. I don't know if you feel this way too, but this is far from a mature state of affairs.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's early. It's early days. We're right at the beginning of this thing. I think the hype. We're probably past the peak of pure hype and moving into, you know, the plateau of productivity.
are we out of the whatever thing, disillusionment?
Something like that, yes. Yeah, I think we are. I think it's now moving into, okay, we're now trying to actually get stuff done. And to your point, Keith, I think a lot of the existing investments that enterprises have made in stuff that works and is functional, it's fine. Leave it as it is. You don't need to change that. But the advantage of adopting Kubernetes is that infrastructure layer. It's a standard that you can then build in and swap things in and out of. And I think the goal there of being able to change things rapidly is having something with the value of like Ethernet. To go to something slightly closer to your heart there, Ethan.
I was going to make the analogy of the x86 box.
Yeah. Standardized compute platform. So now I don't need to worry about whether I'm addressing... Well, we do actually need to worry if we're addressing ARM or x86 these days. A little bit. But I don't worry about ATM networks and X25 pad or any of that sort of nonsense anymore. Everything is Ethernet. And Ethernet 1, it's sometimes worse is better.
So with that, are we, you know, we've all talked to vendors at the on the show floor that have built amazing products that could not have been built without Kubernetes. So, Ethan, this is more of a question, I think, directly to you. Are we going to consume Kubernetes indirectly versus building a Kubernetes cluster and us building products and services around Kubernetes, the bare metal thing, versus we're just going to consume services from IT companies that have built their businesses on Kubernetes?
And that's what I have the same question, Keith, honestly. That's when you look at what Kubernetes is and the complexity of it, the capabilities of it, I'm going, okay, maybe I just want to consume Kubernetes as a service and worry about it as little as possible, just consume it straight up. Another indicator of that for me is if you look at Kubernetes release notes, you know, 1.14, 1.15, 1.16 dot something, wherever we're at currently, you read these release notes. These are not, I mean, there are breaking changes built in. You can pretty be sure they're like, we released 10 new alpha features. You know, this isn't the kind of thing that you really want to have to be thinking about as an enterprise. You really want someone else to worry about that stuff, give you a consumable platform. And are we going to have to know that it's Kubernetes under the hood? I don't know. I think maybe not. Maybe it's kind of like consuming cloud at large, like AWS. Do we, most of us, know what's going on under the hood of Azure, AWS, or GCP? Not really. We don't know much about the bare metal. We know the primitives that are given to us, the APIs that we can consume, and that's really all we, quote-unquote, need to understand.
I was at Microsoft Ignite, and every year they do a deep dive into what's actually going on in the Azure data centers, and I really thought I was interested. And about 10 minutes in, I was like, no, I'm going to go to something else, because, you know, I don't care.
Mm.
I work with Azure, and I consume Azure through its APIs and its portal and PowerShell. I don't care how you configure the servers. I mean, it's cool. Yeah, whatever. It's difficult engineering problems that are being solved by somebody else. So I don't have to. And I feel like Kubernetes, to a certain degree, is also that. And I'm wondering if we're going to move away from the way that you deploy to Kubernetes today, which is using some sort of pipeline that's running like kubectl or kubectl or however you want to say that. That's a topic for another day. Do you think there is going to be a tool set that is just centered around deployment that completely abstracts the fact that you're using Kubernetes at all?
For exactly the reason that you mentioned there. Like, I don't really care about the details of how an internal combustion engine works. I get in a car and I drive the thing. In fact, these days, I don't even drive. I don't do it enough. I spend most of my time on airplanes. I don't know how to fly an airplane. I get on one, the pilot takes me where I want to go. I don't need to know the details of how an airplane engine works.
There's a counter argument to this, though. You know, and I'll throw out there the certifications that have been put out there around Kubernetes. So someone in the Kubernetes world thinks that there are people like you, Ned, that maybe should become a certified Kubernetes administrator. You're supposed to know how the engine works, apparently.
Kubernetes, you know, the hard way.
Exactly. Kelsey's Kubernetes the hard way. So you can sit and learn how to deploy Kubernetes from bottom to top, literally the hard way, know all the ins and outs of it, and stand it up in GCP.
Well, somebody has to, because someone needs to repair and manage the engines on the aircraft. Because if nobody does that, they fall off or explode.
So today, and this is, I like to compare it to the vSphere world. Today, if I were building a green field and I needed VMs, you know what? There's really not a better player in the market than VMware for running VMs. Mm-hmm. If I'm deploying applications, SAP, these traditional applications that are static, they are best suited for VMs, and I'm a brand new organization, I'm going to look at a service like VMC on AWS or Cloud Simple in Azure, because I don't want to train staff on how to use vSphere. That's like, I can put smart people to do different things. And my frustration with Kubernetes is that Kubernetes is entering the enterprise, at least the enterprise with, you know what, you have to be a PhD sysadmin to deploy Kubernetes. And I've been advising my customers away from that motion of running infrastructure when they don't have to.
Well, I would argue that that was the whole promise of the cloud in the first place, is to abstract away some of those details so that your IT folks can get to the business of operations and monitoring and not worry about some of the, like, upgrading firmware and running power whips.
Big things that eat up a lot of time and cause change control windows and just add a lot of grit in the grease of the organization for very little value add. You don't gain any particular benefit from that, and yet for a small, typically understaffed IT group, it just operates or occupies an enormous number of CPU cycles.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why companies like Rancher and Mirantis exist, is to give you here's some Kubernetes. You don't need to care about that. But it's not just the Kubernetes. It's all the other management tools that wrap around it. So again, with vSphere, it's not actually just about the VMs. It's the operations of VMs.
Yeah,
it's how do you use them to run your business. And you use much higher level tools. You don't actually worry too much about low level hypervisor implementation
details.
We're
still talking to on this show a lot of people that are some VMware certified something or another.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we saying to those people?
You got to learn something else.
The question is, do I learn another low-level technology? Does Kubernetes equal vSphere? And is that something I should be learning? Or should I be learning? So, Keith, I hear you say you hate Kubernetes because it's overcomplicated and the enterprise should wait until it's less complicated to learn. I'm constantly learning. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a constant learner. So what should I be learning?
One of the things that I found interesting is the more advanced certifications in almost all the disciplines move up the stack. It's not about bits and bytes anymore. It's about architecture and design. And yes, some of that is understanding the weird nuances of the technology, VMware or Cisco or something else. But it really gets down to, can you properly architect and design something? Can you think logically through the pitfalls? And if you've developed that skill set, you just need to learn how to apply that same skill set to Kubernetes. Learning every single one of the kubectl commands is not going to be a useful skill.
Yeah, it's about understanding why. And that's, I think people sort of miss, they gloss over that or forget that you need to understand why have you made this choice. Like, we chose vSphere. Well, why? What were the reasons that were the inputs to that decision? Mm-hmm. Because if those inputs change, maybe you should make a new decision, because maybe that decision's not valid anymore. And so when you're deploying into Kubernetes, well, why? Why do people do that? Go and talk to people who use it today. Ask them, why are you using it? Figure out which ones are reasonable reasons. Which one? Do you have any of those reasons? To your point, Keith, it's like, if you don't have any of those reasons, great. Don't use Kubernetes.
And the same reasons, because some of these people that are running Kubernetes today, it's because they're masochists. They just love the depth you can get into with operations and love tech for its own sake, and Kubernetes is something to beat their heads against next and see if they can conquer.
There's nothing wrong with that. People love muscle cars.
People love trains.
They're totally impractical, but they're fun.
Yeah.
And maybe for some people, Kubernetes is a muscle car.
Yeah, and some of it is just doing it because it's, hey, technology is sometimes fun to play with. And I remember doing exactly that earlier in my career. Now I'm old and tired, and I don't have time for this.
So Ned, you had said you don't see that there's going to be much value in knowing kubectl commands. I think for some, maybe there will be, though, right? Because it would depend on the organization and kind of how they're deploying it. So maybe some engineers would want to go to that depth and become a certified Kubernetes administrator because in their situation, it is valuable. But I don't know that that's the skill that's going to get you your next job.
To borrow the metaphor of, I don't know how planes work, I just fly on them, and lots of companies hire somebody else to take care of their fleet of motor vehicles. But at a certain scale and a certain capacity, it makes more sense for you to manage and repair the things that you run, whether that's motor vehicles or IT infrastructure. So depending on the size of the enterprise and whether it's adds business value for you to be able to run Kubernetes on your own, maybe that does make sense. In a big organization, get that cert.
I mean, it worries me knowing the complexity that Kubernetes is at its current, early, immature stage. You know, it's functional. It runs in prod. Some of the biggest organizations in the world use it, of course. We know this. Mm-hmm. It came out of Google. If you have those people on staff that understand what is going on under the hood when things are going badly, it can be awfully nice to have an engineer or a team, you know, a tiger team you can go to help you put out that fire and get that system back online. But is that going to be most companies? I think we're arguing, no, Kubernetes as a service is the thing you want to consume and, you know, save some staff overhead, leave the Kubernetes operations to whoever it is that you're consuming it from.
So we've heard these stories on Twitter that, man, I just got a job offer for $300,000 a year, $500,000, because I have Kubernetes on my resume. Are we past that period where if you can learn Kubernetes, put it in production today, a year from now, you'll get a $1 million salary? I think that, because that's the temptation. When I see that on Twitter, I'm like, I hate Kubernetes, but for $300,000 a year, I can hate it for a couple of years.
But you got to figure there's a small number of companies that are going to be deploying Kubernetes in prod. The number of people that have the skill sets required are small. So you're at this point of very large companies that are well capitalized and can afford the staff are having an extremely hard time finding the expertise they need to run this thing in-house. And so at the moment, we've got this inflated salary thing. It's got to be temporary, right?
So true story, I interviewed for the senior manager role at a big media company, and it was for managing their OpenStack team. I interviewed with the whole team. And then a year later, that whole team wholesale was at Walmart. Wholesale, the entire team.
Mean they're Walmart greeters, or they're working on Walmart's IT infrastructure?
They were managing Walmart's OpenStack implementation.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I wasn't sure where you were going with this. Okay.
So it is a real challenge of finding these resources.
Sure. But I think that's because of where we are on the maturity cycle. The whole thrust of one of the keynote presentations this morning was Kubernetes is immature, and these are the three things that we need to improve upon. And it was, how do I control it? How do I develop against it? How do I debug it? And the last slide was, we need to improve the user experience. Mm. And I couldn't agree more. And I feel like now that some of the really difficult block and tackling is done, now a lot of the changes you're going to see in 1.17 and 1.18, et cetera, is all going to be user experience tweaks. How can we make this more consumable and usable?
And that's the standard way that technology has developed since forever. Yep. The first one is get it minimally functional. You know, first make it work, then make it good. So I think we've finally gotten to the point where Kubernetes basically works now. Now it's time to make it good.
Agreed. We will make it good. All right. We're getting about a time. So if I could just have some final thoughts from Keith, if you want to go first.
So I think my output from this show is, if you're considering Kubernetes, just basic question is of why. And be honest, if you're engineering, you're looking at this and you're looking at kind of a paycheck and being able to get this on your resume, be honest with that and ask yourself, are you in a position that you're doing your business a disservice? If you're an executive, ask yourself, what problem am I solving? And is Kubernetes the solution?
And if people want to get more of these excellent messages, where can they find you?
They can find me on the Twitters at CTO Advisor, and the blog is thectoadvisor.com.
Awesome. Justin?
This has always been one of my favorite shows of the year. I really enjoy this crowd. I've enjoyed watching this community grow, and I think it is only going to get bigger and more interesting. It does feel like this is the ecosystem of where modern infrastructure is going to move to. That's not to say that other pieces of infrastructure are going away. We're still going to have lots and lots of VMware. These things take a long time to change. But we are going to see a lot more Kubernetes. So if you are interested in the leading edge of where technology is going, I think it is in your best interest to learn a bit about how Kubernetes works and why Kubernetes works the way it does.
All right.
Justin, next year will we see you in purple hair and a hoodie?
You might. I might have to get my own merch so I can blend in here.
Where can we find you online, Justin?
You can find me on Twitter as @JPWarren, and you can find the company as pivot9.com, PIVOTNINE.com.
Thank you. Thanks to our guests for appearing on Day 2 Cloud, and virtual high five to you for tuning in. If you have suggestions for future shows, we'd love to hear them. Hit either of us up on Twitter, Ned1313 or EC Banks, or fill out the form on my fancy website, nedinthecloud.com.
Ned, you're so fancy.
I'm so fancy. Packet Pushers has a weekly newsletter, Human Infrastructure Magazine. HIM is loaded with the best stuff we found on the internet, plus our own feature articles and commentary. It's free and doesn't suck. Get the next issue via packetpushers.net. /newsletter. Until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.